paid, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything could die someday he comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Job and I put my money away, but I got the kind of debt that no honest man can pay. So I threw out what I had from the Central Trust, and I bought us two tickets on that Coast City bus. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Now our luck may have died and our love may be cold, but with you forever I'll stay. Chicken man in Philly last night, and they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble busting in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Job and I put my money away, but I got the kind of debt that no honest man can pay. So I threw out what I had from the Central Trust.
city bus. If a thing dies, maybe that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Now our luck may have died and our love may be cold, but with you forever I'll stay. Till we're going out where the sand turns to gold, but put your stockings on, 'cause it might get cold. Oh, everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
All right, much as we like that band and that song, it's a couple minutes after 9 o'clock at KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
It's 6 o'clock. The birds are singing. I'm wide awake. Was just too fast asleep. I went outside into your garden. The sun was bright and the air was cool, and as I stood there listening, oh well, the birds in your garden, they all started singing this song. Take her now, don't be scared, it's alright. Oh come on, touch her inside. It's a crime against nature. She's been waiting all night. Come on, hold her. Kiss her. Tell her you care. If you wait till tomorrow, she'll no longer be there. Come on, come on and give it to her. You know it's now or never. Yeah, the birds in your garden have all started singing. My father never told me about the birds and the bees, and I guess I never realized that I would ever meet birds as beautiful as this. I came inside, climbed to your bedroom. Your eyes awake. Then I did what I knew was solely natural. And then the birds in your garden, they all started singing this song. Take her now, don't be scared, it's alright. Oh come on, touch her inside. It's a crime against nature. She's been waiting all night. Come on, hold her. Kiss her and tell her you care. If you wait till tomorrow, started singing the song. Yeah, the birds in your garden, they told me the words to this song.
That's music from Pulp, with a song called Birds in Your Garden, as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, etc., etc., is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, and I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. You can also instant message us, instant messenger at Talking Animals, screen name. Other ways to be in touch include emailing us. That'll be, of course, less immediate, but still appreciated nonetheless, at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and by checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net, folks. Speaking of which, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a reasonable balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our website, again, at talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. What do you think of them apples? But clearly the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Linda McLeod, who's been rescuing and rehabilitating wild birds and mammals for more than 25 years, and as such is the founder and director of Pacific Wildlife Project, a wildlife rescue and recovery center that currently is contending with an sort of inexplicable deluge of starving brown pelicans dotting the Orange County and surrounding beaches. So we'll find out more about Linda, the Pacific Wildlife Project, including a couple of its worldwide distinctions, no less. And, of course, about those pelicans when Linda McLeod joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you again of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, something locally, something regionally, nationally, globally, whatever, maybe an announcement of a fundraiser or animal-related benefit that you're involved with that we should know about, other observations, any stories, news stories, of course, you might have spotted. All of those would be most welcome. The number is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight in one way or another. And with any luck to get your comments on, maybe a little discussion even, it could happen. So we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So having said that, okay, wait for it, here it comes. Let's talk turkey. As it were. As always, produced by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's start with a story that you couldn't really escape last week. A rough one in a lot of ways, from a lot of angles, I suppose. This is just going to read at least some of the Associated Press coverage of this. Of course, headline, Escaped Tiger Shot Dead. And sub-head there is, a Florida wildlife officer kills the animal after it lunged at him. Bobo belonged to a B-movie actor who once played Tarzan. So this, of course, is Dateline, as we like to say. Waxahachie, Florida. A tiger that escaped from the home of a movie actor who once played Tarzan was shot to death Tuesday after it lunged at a state wildlife officer who was trying to capture it. Officers approached the tiger, intending to shoot it with tranquilizers, but the tiger jumped at one officer who fired a shotgun in self-defense, said Jorge Pino, a spokesman with the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. A dozen wildlife trackers and sheriff's deputies had searched more than 24 hours for the animal, which escaped Monday. They had kept watch Tuesday in a five-acre area of dense slash pines and palm trees, hoping to catch the six-year-old tiger named Bobo. His owner, Steve Sipek, developed a soft spot for jungle beasts after playing Tarzan in B-movies decades ago. Sipek has another tiger, a panther, a cougar, and lions on his South Florida compound about 10 miles from West Palm Beach. So he told reporters he doubted Bobo had to be killed. Quote, they murdered a poor, helpless animal that only looked ferocious as any tiger would, but Bobo had a heart of gold. Some nearby residents who moved to the rural area so they could have room for their own pets were less sympathetic. Quote, what I want to know is when he was in captivity, how long did he go without a feeding? Asked Kim Smith, who has horses and dogs that she normally keeps outside. Wildlife officials said they did not believe that the declawed pet would attack, even though he bit a woman working inside his cage 2 years ago. So, I don't know. Any thoughts? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, a rough one. Indeed, I mean, even an incidental part of that, really, I mean, at least the way the story was reported, was that this tiger was declawed, but declawing big cats, any cats, really, is its own significant issue. At some point, I hope to devote a show to that. There's a really cool veterinarian, Dr. Jennifer, and her last name escapes me, but who heads the Paw Project, and it's all about dealing with big cats primarily that have been declawed and the problems and complications that can ensue from that, and obviously trying to urge people not to do that. So anyway, but otherwise, a guy with a tiger, you know, and multiple big cats. Any thoughts, any comments? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And a little update, last couple weeks in a row, I believe, we've mentioned Ruby. That's the elephant that was kind of ripped from her animal companion Gita at the Los Angeles Zoo and taken to the Knoxville Zoo, and then the follow-up stories that we've been sort of following pretty closely is that Ruby was not integrating into the zoo there and with the other elephants there, and in fact was very isolated, and then had this kind of service again of talking animals more specifically in the last couple 3 weeks, is that they had brought in an elephant trainer with sort of a checkered past at best, to sort of almost force the integration, which seemed like perfectly the wrong thing to do. So anyway, I was delighted that in just sort of flipping around over the weekend, or maybe it was even Friday, on the TV, and I landed on a local TV news piece about Ruby, and now the last thing I really thought was possible, or I'd sort of given up this option, I think other people involved with the Ruby situation had as well, is there seems to be some talk of bringing Ruby back. I mean, the more recent kind of aim, I think, has been to, either way, get her out of the Knoxville Zoo, but at that point then see about taking her to the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee, which is a really cool, huge place, 2,500 acres, and again, we're going to have the director of that on in the coming weeks on Talking Animals. But now they seem to be talking about actually bringing Ruby back, and I guess that, well, implicit in that, I imagine, is then maybe repaired with Gita. So anyway, for any information on that, hit www.saveruby.org, and there's all kinds of info, kind of what's happened, and also there's a page about writing for Ruby. So, you know, you can write the zoo people, you can write the mayor, you can write other people that, you know, the more they hear, I mean, this has worked. I mean, the pressure and the media and the letters have worked in this case. I mean, it's not done, it's not resolved, but boy, it seems to be taking a much better turn than a lot of people would have hoped for. So, anyways, good for Ruby. Let's just keep the pressure on so we get her where she can be comfortable and happy again. All right. That's my elephant public service for the moment, at least. Moving on a broader base, this is actually from Maine, and this comes to us courtesy of the Fund for Animals, which says the Fund for Animals, the Humane Society of the United States, and Maine Citizens for Fair Bear Hunting are supporting efforts to place an initiative on the Maine ballot this November to ban bear baiting, hunting bears with hounds, and bear trapping. Maine is the only state that allows all three inhumane and unsporting practices. However, it appears that the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is illegally spending public dollars to defeat the November measure. Under Maine law, public agencies may not spend public funds to take sides in elections and attempt to influence results. Attorney Bruce Merrill, speaking for the fund and other referendum supporters, said, quote, what this does is create a situation where supporters of the ban are not getting a fair shake. So let's keep an eye on that and maybe weigh in if you can. I mean, we love Maine. And in so many ways, but we don't love bear baiting, much less bear hunting or bear trapping. My God! So let's keep a close eye on that. And while we're on the bear topic, as it were, this is actually from Maryland. A rally to oppose the proposed black bear hunt in Maryland, the first bear hunt in 50 years, will take place July 24th. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Governor's Mansion in Annapolis, Maryland. Maryland citizens and concerned animal activists will gather with signs, banners, and leaflets to inform the public and urge Governor Ehrlich to stop the trophy hunt. The current black bear population in Maryland only numbers about 300 to 400 bears. Even so, the state has proposed a trophy hunt to begin this October. Please come to the rally on July 24th and speak out for Maryland's bears. The Maryland Department of Natural Resources accepting comments on the hunt. And again, find out online. You can weigh in online, I'm sure. But again, we don't like hunting bears, really, anything. But we're going to look at that in a perhaps slightly more bemusing way in the Comedy Corner coming up shortly. So let's get in a little quiz question, for which, as always, there are cool prizes. There are CDs from past guests. There are books, both from guests and from non-guests, including one that we had to offer and still do, is the latest Shirley MacLaine book, because that is co-written by her dog, a burgeoning literary talent, near as I can tell. But we also have cat collars and toys, dog collars, cool little animal-related jewelry. We've got T-shirts galore, including a cool one from Paws about animals. Animals don't belong in circus. Got a neat little slogan and drawing. Boy, what else do we have? A CD that the PETA folks. Do I have one handy? Yeah, it's to raise money for PETA. It's called Songs to Benefit PETA. The overall title actually is Liberation. And Goldfinger, The Faint, Good Charlotte, The Used, Desparacitos, all kinds of folks are on there. So you might want to check that out. Also, today, both for the quiz question and later for Name That Animal Tune, a prize that we will also offer is a two-song sampler of the forthcoming Finn Brothers album. Everyone is here. It's not out till August 24th. But if you call in with the right answer on one of these questions, you may have your choice of that as well. All right, so here it is. First one to call in at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. We'll have their choice of all those goodies and more. So I saw this thing, in fact, in the UC Davis magazine. Yes, I'm an alum. Tracking from 1950 and then in 1975 and then again in 2000, the most popular dog breeds. So the question is this: what breed would you say is the most popular in 2000 that was not even on the list, and there's five on each list, was not on the list either in 1975 or 1950? So the most popular dog breed in as of 2000 that would have not been on the either of the two previous lists in 1975 or 1950. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So, well, we have more news that I would like to get to, and we may still. But we got to get into the Comedy Corner. And then, of course, we want to really jump into our interview with Linda McLeod from Pacific Wildlife Project. So if there are ever any news stories or announcements that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items. TalkingAnimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And of course, I'm obliged, well, sort of, to remind you, I want to, at least, about our website, Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check it out. It's talkinganimals.net. Again, it's .net. And when you go there, please sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every show we've ever done. Photographs and galleries, articles, all kinds of links, audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Bill Engvall. I sort of alluded to this moment ago. This is Bill Engvall with a portion of a piece called Deer Hunting on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
And just when I thought I'd done the stupidest thing a man could do, I surpassed it. I took my wife deer hunting. Big mistake. I should have known there was going to be trouble. We're driving out to where we're going to go hunting, and we're passing these deer crossing signs. And my wife, who's the smartest person I've ever met in my life, literally said, "Why do they put those out there? Deer can't read." "No, but they do recognize pictures of themselves. Here's your sign." Let me set the scene for you. I got on camouflage pants, I got on a camouflage jacket, I got camouflage paint on my face. I have got a 1997 30-06 with a laser scope. She is in a yellow jogging suit, white tennis shoes, and she brought her purse. I'm here to kill a deer, she's gonna take it shopping. Now let me clarify something here. I'm not just a weekend bush hunter. I study deer. I know for a fact that there are over 60 different types of deer on this great earth of ours. One of them is called the muntjac. It's in Southeast Asia. It stands 20 inches high at the shoulders. It has no antlers, and when it gets scared, it gets real skittish. Where I'm from, that's a poodle. I know that there are basically three ways to hunt a deer. You can do the stalk. That's where you get on your feet, and you walk, and you try to sneak up on that buck of your choice. There is the stand hunt. That's where you sit in a tree and you wait for that buck to walk underneath you. There's the drive hunt. That's where you hit a deer with your truck. For those of you taking notes, the third one's the easiest. So my wife and I are up on the deer stand, and any of you hunters out there, you know what I'm talking about. It's the perfect time of day. It's still morning. It's dark. It's cold. You're making steam with your breath. Off in the distance, a turkey gobbles as he wakes up for the morning. In the distance, a squirrel scampers through the dead leaves. It's the perfect time of day. It's quiet. Kinda. Because in the darkness, I keep hearing this. What are we doing? We're waiting for the deer to show up, Princess, okay? Show up. I don't know. They didn't return the phone call to set up the meeting.
All right, that's Bill Engvall with a piece called Deer Hunting, taken from his CD entitled Dorkfish. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you are indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI, 88.9 FM, and broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you, perhaps, arrived through our nifty website, talkinganimals.net. So before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. So early in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Linda McLeod, who's been rescuing and rehabilitating wild birds and mammals and all kinds of other critters for more than 25 years, and as such is the founder and director of the Pacific Wildlife Project Wildlife Rescue and Recovery Center that currently is contending with sort of a inexplicable assault, really, or a case of starving brown pelicans along the Orange County coastline. So we want to hear about all those things and much, much more. As we, of course, remind you that the phone number to join us is 949-824-5824. And let's welcome Linda McLeod. Are you there, Linda?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Duncan.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us here on Talking Animals today.
And good to be here.
And, you know, the Pacific Wildlife Project obviously has a long, full history and is in the midst of this kind of grappling with this kind of new outbreak of the mysterious pelican problems, all which I want to delve into momentarily. But first, I think it's always interesting to hear about someone's history and the path that led them to their, you know, work with animals, especially when it's, you know, the kind of rescue work, and you've been doing it for a long, long time, and obviously with, you know, distinction and sort of worldwide distinction, really. So let's start, if we could, with where did you grow up, and did you grow up with animals right from the get-go?
Actually, I did grow up with animals. I grew up in a rural portion of Florida, of northeast Florida, on the St. John's River, where, amazingly enough, we swam with the manatees.
Oh, wow. And that was just part of your day-to-day existence then, or?
Well, it sort of was. My parents owned a restaurant where it seemed to be a dropping-off point for lots of stray animals and stray people too, by the way.
Yeah.
Which all were adopted by my parents and specifically by my sweet mother. And we used to swim. We weren't allowed to swim in the river, but we did that.
Wow. So this so you have this in your blood then, helping animals. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. And, you know, it's funny about the manatees, because we'd swim in the river and you'd see these creatures come up to you, and you'd see them all the time, and they'd snort water, and sometimes they'd actually come up to you and just kind of barely touch you, and it was always a thrill. You'd go, oh, a sea cow. Well, there were sea cows to us.
Sure.
You'd be touched by one, and it was always a thrill, and I had long since forgotten it in my childhood memories, and then years later I read about manatees and realized, oh, those were the sea cows.
Wow. And back then, were there as much problem of you know, propellers and just other things? I mean, because it sounds like, again, they were just prevalent and so friendly and, you know, just, I guess, in harm's way. But I don't know if it was as bad then as it became in subsequent years.
No, it wasn't bad. Where we were at that time, there really wasn't very much boating and propeller injuries.
Sure.
It was all pretty quiet.
Yeah. So then from that kind of a childhood, did you just stay on a path of helping and rescuing animals, or did you detour for a while to other pursuits? Or
I did detour for a little while to other pursuits. I did some sales for a while and got into audio. And
audio, is that what you
things.
Said? Is that what you said, audio?
Yeah. I actually sold hi-fi for a while.
Wow, cool.
And
we love audio here at Talking Animals and KUCI. Sure, yeah, audio's good.
And then did some accounting. Thought I'd try that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day, unexpectedly, somebody reached in my window when I stopped for gas and handed me a mockingbird and said, "Hey, would you guys," it was on the way to Thanksgiving dinner, "would you guys take this bird? He's been hopping around here all day, and he looks like he needs help." And that was just sort of the beginning of it.
But out of the blue that was done? I mean, why handing it to you? Do you, I mean...
I have no idea. It was
just one of those
really
moments.
Quite out of the blue.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. But obviously then again, it was your destiny to...
It must have been.
Yeah. Wow. So then how did things proceed from there, Linda?
Well, I took the little mockingbird home, mm-hmm. and nursed him back to health, and he did well. And then, oddly enough, the neighborhood kids would bring me things, and I took care of those things, most of which didn't do so well. So I thought, well, I'd better learn a little bit more about this, and I started calling around, and I found a lady that rehabilitated hummingbirds, Pat Burry, the old hummingbird lady.
Oh.
And I started volunteering for her, and my one day a week soon became 6 or 7 days a week, and that's pretty much how I got started doing it.
And so at what point in this sequence you described did you move? I take it at some point there was a move from Florida to California.
Oh, when I was still in high school, my dad came out here for a visit. My brother had lived here, stationed here in the military. And then my dad decided that the family should move to California.
I see. So then once you were doing it really that many days, how many years, I guess, before the founding of the Pacific Wildlife Project? Sounds like you were pretty steeped in that world.
Well, I started rehabbing on my own within the year after I was working for Pat, because every day at the end of the day, she said, you know, we'll work all day, and then at the end of the day, whatever questions you have, you can ask me. And she always set aside some time at the end of the work day to answer questions that I had about various things or other birds. And then she wanted me to teach me about other birds, even though she did just hummingbirds. And she would say, and then one day she said, you know, Linda, you should take care of killdeer, those little shorebirds, because, you know, no one else takes care of them, and they really need somebody to take care of them. So I said, okay, I'll learn about killdeer. And she taught me. And then as time went on, she'd say, you know, Linda, you should learn how to take care of.
I see. And she just kept adding a new one each time.
Yeah, just kept adding new ones. And then she would get calls for various birds, and then she would start sending them to me. And then as time went on, and I started getting so many calls on my own, and I was taking care of so many birds at my own home, I wasn't able to volunteer for her any longer. Then I became established on my own. And that was in mid-late 1970.
Wow. But it was still, if I have my chronology straight, it was still a good number of years before you launched the Pacific Wildlife Project.
The Pacific Wildlife Project was actually incorporated in 1985.
Right, okay.
Right.
Oh, but it actually had started well before that.
Oh, yeah, I actually had been taking care of birds for a few years before then.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And I want to remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. We're speaking with Linda McLeod, who's the founder and director of the Pacific Wildlife Project, a really multifaceted organization that rescues and rehabilitates all kinds of wildlife and has treated more pelicans, among your other distinctions, more pelicans than any facility worldwide, which I think is pretty cool.
Amazingly enough, that's
true. Yeah. So you can join the conversation by calling us. You have a question for Linda, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or by way of AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals. So, can we talk a little bit, and by the way, I also want to multiple times mention your great website, which is pacificwildlife.org. I mean, it's really got great info, and I want to get later into a specific feature that I haven't really come across anywhere else on animals related websites, but it's a really great site that people should go for all kinds of information. So can we talk a little bit about, speaking of pelicans, Operation Pelican Watch and sort of what that, you know, evolved into and just how that became at least one of the real focuses of your work?
Okay.
So how did that, I mean, when did you sort of, given all those birds that you kept sort of dealing with, when did you sort of veer onto pelicans being at least a focus?
Well, that was sort of a fluke thing too.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the whole thing is karmic, because it was in the early 90s, I believe it was like 91, 92. I got a telephone call from a lady that said she was down at one of the harbors, and there was she saw several injured pelicans and wanted to know, could we do anything about them? And then she went on to say that she was down there regularly and saw pelicans that had fishing lines and fish hooks and various things tangled on them, and they really needed help and couldn't our organization do anything about it? And she was insistent. So we at the time didn't have too many volunteers. There were only about two or three of us, mostly family members.
Wow.
And so I thought, well, maybe it is really bad, and I should have somebody go down there and take a look. So my sister went down there to take a look, and sure enough, we found a bunch of birds with lures hanging on them, with lines wrapped around their legs, and she checked it out, and she said they were in trouble. So my sister started going out We rented a boat over at one of the harbors, and my sister got a couple of people. And this gal that had called, we recruited her, and she went on the team. My sister got a couple of people that she worked with, and they became the first rescue team. And they started going out about every week or every other week, and started the Operation Pelican Watch.
Wow. Wow, wow. And then I guess from there, it because there was just so much similar need that it really kind of branched into two teams. Actually, Linda, it looks like we might have a call. Would you like to take a call from a listener?
Sure.
Okay. Hi, you're on the air live on Talking Animals at KUCI with Linda McLeod.
Oh, hi there. Linda, it's so wonderful that you do this kind of work. I was just wondering, how difficult is it to untangle a pelican? Like, are they approachable in that way, or...
Well, they are somewhat approachable, and that's probably one of the reasons that they get themselves in trouble, because having no natural enemies, they don't fear humans. So they're not really difficult to catch. A little technique is involved, and particularly because they are going to be a little defensive and someone could become injured. The problem with a citizen doing a rescue to taking off and taking off line is this. A lot of times those wounds cause constriction. They're constriction wounds, and they cut off the blood supply. Usually that limb is not usable for some period of time. In other words, it requires some hospitalization and recovery time.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be released right away. While it would be okay for a citizen to untangle a bird if they could safely catch it without injuring themselves or the bird, it should come in to a center like ours to be hospitalized to make sure that it didn't need further care. Also, it's hard to tell. You don't know how long it's been tied up, and maybe it also has starvation, which we find frequently.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, thank you very much for that information.
Thank you.
And good luck with the rest of your work.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. And actually, Linda, we have another caller holding if you'd like to take another one.
Sure.
Great. You're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Linda McLeod.
Yes, I have a question for Linda.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay, Linda, I really admire the work that you're doing. I just wanted to ask you, as a frequent visitor to Florida, I see a lot of pelicans, and I admire them certainly from a distance. They seem very, very hard to handle. I would never approach one. So what kind of technique do you use, and how does it work that you're able to really get hold of them, because they must be in such great distress?
Some training certainly is required, as I mentioned. And when my people go out to rescue, they are people that have worked previously at the center with the birds. And when you work around them for some period of time, you begin to notice their behavior, and you learn what their reactions are to various things that you do. And you have to be quicker than they are and know where to grab them safely so neither of you are injured.
I see. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you.
And thanks for the call. And on a related note, I was going to get into this later, but this might be a really good time. Tell us a little bit about, if you could, the volunteer, because, again, if anyone's listening that wants to get involved, we'd love to have them contact you again through the website, pacificwildlife.org, or by other means. But if I'm not mistaken, there's a really pretty good training that the volunteers go through for some of these questions that our callers have just raised, in fact, right?
There is, yes. And mostly, well, I tell my volunteers it's sort of trial by fire.
Okay.
It's on-the-job training. They're all, when they come in to volunteer, they're assigned to a senior volunteer where they're walked through our procedures, our hospital procedures and cleaning procedures, which really constitutes a major portion of our work. So I don't want anybody to think that it's a glamour job. It
sure.
isn't.
Yeah.
And then after they become comfortable, they will do some handling, and they'll learn safe handling of a variety of species, including the pelican.
I see. And really, since, of course, pelicans is what we're talking about, and pelicans has been the focus, let's turn for a moment to the sort of current situation, I guess mystery, really, maybe, of the starving brown pelicans that have been sort of turning up recently. When did that start, and what's your best, theory as to what's behind that?
Oddly enough, it started just about the time that we lost our lease at the Irvine Animal Shelter and had to move from that facility and moved into temporary quarters. So it came at a very bad time for us.
I'll say.
So we're now in a very small place at my home. We started. It was right about the first of this month.
Okay.
And we got a call for a couple of injured birds. Turned out they were starvation, not injured. And then every day after that started getting them. So now we're still rescuing maybe five birds a day, sometimes 10 birds a day. I think so far we're up to, I'd have to sit down and count, but I think it's roughly around 60 birds now.
Oh my goodness.
So, and my best theory on what's happening?
Yeah, what's caused this? Yeah.
I've done a little bit of research on it, and having had experience with the animals and knowing a little bit about their behavior and the time of year and all, this is what I think is happening. These obviously are Mexico birds. The major breeding colonies in this area are Channel Islands off Santa Barbara and then in Mexico. These are the Mexican birds, and they travel northerly along our coastline after the breeding season, which is pretty much about now, so that's on schedule. What may be happening is in their major, one of their major colonies right in the Gulf of California in the Sea of Cortez, apparently that area has been decimated ecologically, and the fish supplies are all but gone. There have been some natural disasters there. There has been some hurricane activity, and it's an area that's victim to a lot of overfishing, and the balance of food is very skewed.
Oh wow.
So I understand there are some environmental organizations there trying to affect some recovery of the area, but right now there's no fish. So here you have a colony of these pelicans at post-breeding, and they're looking for food now. And there are a lot of them. The colony has had a breeding success this year. Some years they don't. And in the area where they were born, in Sea of Cortez, they're not finding food. So birds that would normally stay in the area are leaving and going northerly, and then we're getting them. By the time they reach their destination in our area, their energy stores are depleted.
Yeah, they're weak and hungry. And
And then they're coming here, and they're fine. The fish supply here is not really low. The fish supply here seems to be okay.
Mm.
So it has to be that they're starving at the place of origin.
So then it sounds like if I follow this, that given, you know, the huge numbers, but still, once you guys have rehabilitated them, because the fish supply is actually good here, then their prospects for recovery and being okay, at least for the time being, are good.
Right. We think they have a pretty good chance of survival once they get through that, once they recover from that starvation, and then we're sending them a bit further north, So that they're even more assured of a good food supply.
I see. Well, and again, as this conversation and some of the other points we've made suggest, you're really, you know, chiefly recognized for your work with the pelicans. But what are some of the other birds and mammals that you also you know, find yourself frequently helping at the center there?
Well, we actually are a humane organization that happens to specialize in the care of wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that we don't turn down any animal that needs help. We will care for a baby pigeon or a gull or a crow or a sparrow or a starling as readily as we would any other animal. We take in a number of songbirds, what they call songbirds, and mockingbirds, robins, the birds that you see every day flying around. We also get a variety of other shorebirds, herons and killdeer and stilts and lots of other things. And then small mammals. We'll take any small mammal, possums, squirrels, bunnies, raccoons.
You do it all.
We do it all.
Yeah.
Now, the only things that we do not take in our center are things that we're prohibited from by the agency, and that is that would be the carnivore, the large carnivores, because of liability issues. But if someone calls with those, we would certainly stay with that case until the animal was at the proper place and getting the proper care.
And speaking of that, Linda, one of the things I sort of alluded to earlier, but I really this might be a great time to mention, is that I've so far I don't think I've seen this on any other website of all the great animal rescue and other kind of organizations out there. But there's a thing on your website called the Urgent Help page, and it seems like if you have a problem, you discover an animal that's in trouble, injured, ill, whatever, that I guess you just quickly fill out this form on that Urgent Help page, and then you hear back, the person that's filling it out hears back within moments about what to do and how to proceed. Is that right?
That was our webmaster's brainchild, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, no one else.
The electronic age. We get a message on our cell phones, a text message on cell phones.
Wow. Yeah, because seriously, I think that is the first such facility worldwide that does do that or does offer that, and I'm sure others will be quickly following suit because it's an amazing service to offer.
Yeah, wow. And it's working very well, and it's nice. I'll tell you, doing what we do, there's nothing in the world more heartbreaking than returning a call, and sometimes the call volume just gets so tremendous that it takes a while before you can get back to someone, and there's nothing more heartbreaking than to have that caller tell you in tears that the bird died.
Oh, yeah.
So, in nearly all cases, there wouldn't have been anything that we could have done when the bird dies in that short a period of time, because you have to have some response.
Sure.
But still, it's disappointing. It's disheartening that we weren't there for the person.
Right. Well, you're certainly there to the extent you can be. And again, this Urgent Help thing, let me remind people again that the website is pacificwildlife.org, and then right sort of at the top of the menu is that Urgent Help portion. So that's really great. Now, you made reference to, and I don't know if you do or don't want to talk about this, right when the pelican situation kind of developed, that you lost your lease at the facility you'd been at. Was that just, did it just expire, or was there something else, or is this something you want to talk about?
Well, we knew that had been coming. We had been in talks with the city for some time, and actually, to their credit, they let us stay for quite a few months longer than they really wanted to.
I see.
It just happens to be one of those situations where we had been there for a while. We were there for almost 8 years, and folks at the city just wanted, they had other plans that they wanted to pursue for the area that we were using, and they didn't, and sadly, the city didn't feel that they wanted to continue to offer a wildlife program.
Hmm. And so I guess at least as an interim step, you've moved the facility into your home?
Right, yeah.
Wow.
For many years before we moved into Irvine, we actually did operate out of my home.
And so will you stay put for a while, or is this the idea is at some point to find new facility to move into when you can?
We are desperately looking for a new facility. My home location is not suitable. When we were operating out of there before, we were in county jurisdiction, and my neighborhood was kind of, it was one of those old hippie neighborhoods, and, it wasn't really a big problem having animals in there, and my neighbors have ducks and goats and some other things. But now, property values being what they are, the neighborhood has sort of changed, and my neighbors are going to feel a little more inconvenienced by this activity.
I'm sure.
So
yeah.
We're hoping to find an alternative location pretty soon.
Yeah, I would think. Well, Linda, we're just about nearing the end of our time, but that sounds like at least a somewhere between a huge inconvenience and a crisis of sorts. But I also know that over 20 plus years. Actually, looks like we may have another caller. Let's just see. We might take another call.
No, that's
okay.
Fine.
Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI and Talking Animals with Linda McLeod.
Oh, hi. I had a question for Linda. I'm curious how are you funding this, all this work you're doing? It can't be cheap.
Well, it isn't cheap. First of all, we learn how to stretch a dollar as far as it can possibly go. We don't pay any salaries. All of us are volunteers. And we survive on donations from members of the public. Because we have humane roots and we have the ethics and goals that we do, we are not funded by any government agency simply because we want to be able to choose what we care for and how we do it. So yes, just individual donations. We are strictly grassroots of the people.
Wow. That's
very admirable. How can you donate to the website?
You can make donations through the website. You can just follow the prompts on the front page to donate. And there are a number of ways that people can donate. So if you click on the donate button, you'll be able to see a number of ways that people can help.
And again, that's PacificWildlife.org. So yeah, by all means, let's all pitch in and help throw a few dollars their way, especially while they're looking for a new facility. So that's a great question. Thanks so much for calling.
Yeah, thank you. That's great work you're doing. Good luck.
Thank you. Yeah, people have the opportunity to volunteer through the website as
right.
well, because
no.
we always need help.
Yeah, no, it sounds like if people just go to the website and if they find an animal that needs help, they can get help there. But also it's a great place to go if they really could just spare a few some time volunteering. And, of course, also if they could reach in their pocket and spare a few dollars to help help keep the center going, that would be great. So, Linda, I think we really have now reached the end of our time here on Talking Animals. But, boy, I really, really appreciate you taking the time out of what must be a crazy busy day every day.
it is.
Yeah, to talk with us. And we'll wish you good luck. And we hope that the Pelican thing kind of starts to wind down the current situation and that you find a new facility soon. And we hope that our Talking Animals listeners will step up and volunteer and or send a couple dollars your way.
So. That would be wonderful.
All right. Thanks again for your time, Linda.
Thank
Good
you,
luck.
Duncan.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Again, that was Linda McLeod, and it's the Pacific Wildlife Project. And I want to thank her again for joining us today. And one more time, at least, I think we should mention the organization's website is www.pacificwildlife.org. So I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI in Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. Again, pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always what? Animal-related. That's right. So I'll play a snippet of this tune, and there will be a prize. And I mentioned earlier, we've got a bunch of cool prizes from T-shirts, books, CDs. We even right now have a little two-song sampler. Be the first in your block to hear a couple songs from the Finn Brothers' forthcoming album. Everyone is here. We got a bunch of stuff. So anyways, if you are the first person to call in and identify this animal tune at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, then you'll have your choice of those prizes. All right, so this is, I think this is an animal tune. It's at least peripherally related to an animal tune. All right, so let's get started. It's Talking Animals. Name That Animal Tune here on KUCI. Wow, used to that crazy vinyl. All right, can anyone name that animal tune? If so, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. My title's already mentioned a few times, but, and again, peripherally animal tune, but I think you could make the case for it. I'm certainly making the case for it. All right, so we have just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals on KUCI. And I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. And I want to thank again our guest, Linda McLeod from Pacific Wildlife Project. Their website is PacificWildlife.org. I also want to thank you for listening and for all the cool phone calls. We received some really great calls and questions. I appreciate those, as always. And I hope you join us next week on Talk Animals when I'm hoping that our guest will be Heather Herman, and that's the teenager in Denver who's been trying to pass legislation to prevent Ringling Brothers and other circuses that use animals from being able to perform in the Denver area. So this, of course, is sort of time to Ringling Brothers rolling into Southern California shortly, and if we do pull it off, it'll be a couple of days when we speak with Heather before they actually roll into the Anaheim Pond. So that's what we're hoping for. So check it out. Come back either way next Monday, July 26th, on Talking Animals. And by the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just on Mondays, just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, of course, which precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan, followed at 5:30 by Counterspin. And again, that's just one day. That's just today. There's a great public affairs programming and talk shows like that virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then again, from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I host a show called The Dead Air Zone, which is eclectic, to say the least, from hour to hour, show to show. But I hope you'll check it out. That's Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. So when you have a chance, please check that out. And again, check out TalkingAnimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. I also encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at TalkingAnimals@AOL.com. I really, really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott. And the Blues Disease is great, great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. As always, be kind to animals, be kind to others, be kind to yourself. And, of course, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune, a blues number, no less. This should slide nicely into the Blues Disease. This is Ike Turner with the Kings of Rhythm with Catfish Blues. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Lord, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. You know crying won't make me stay. Well, now the more you cry, pretty baby, whether you're gonna drive, whether you're gonna drive. Lord, if I was a catfish mama, swimming in the down.
down.